the this committee heard the constitutional arguments as to old 3271 2 years ago, and those arguments are still valid today. Now, I'm not going to say more. I'm going to let the representative of the exhibitors and some representatives of the legitimate news vendors have their say here too. Now, are there any questions, John?
Thank you. Are there any questions at this time? Okay. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Bob Gross.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Dr. Bob Gass, pastor of Harvest Baptist Temple in Medford, Oregon. I represent from between 400 and 450 people who've asked me to appear on their request, as well as a number of other pastors in our area concerning House Bill 2431. I also have with me, and will leave with you, petitions, some totaling 361 signatures that I was able to get on short notice to come before this meeting today. I appreciate, first of all, the privilege of being here. It's my first time to appear before any kind of committee at all, and I deem it a privilege to be able to use our system and appear before you today and make these comments, and I will be brief. As a former law enforcement officer, I can tell you firsthand that pornography does bring additional crime into any area. Percentage figures right now show that 90% of hardcore pornography is controlled by organized crime in the United States of America. While this bookstore was in its initial stages, I did go into that store while it was still a grocery store and a place of pornography. Having been a law enforcement officer, I looked for certain things within the store that would contribute to delinquency of minors or disseminating certain kinds of materials to minors. So I walked into the store. There was a sign there at that point, no minors beyond this point, and no one under the age of 18 beyond this point. However, at knee level was a glass case containing sexual paraphernalia of the most explicit nature, both male and female, that any 3-year-old child could view straight on from eyesight on the shelves of that glass case. Upon entering the aisles, which were no longer than 8 feet or so, the patent display of sexual activity on the part of male and male, and female and female was overtly displayed on the shelves. Nothing was left for the imagination. Everything was embarrassingly displayed. Those things that were on the inside of those books were also displayed openly on the covers. The sign, therefore, would have been of no avail because anyone could have stood there, and within a point of 8 feet, as well as I can see the names in front of me, I can see what's on those books, the titles of the material and the pictures so blatantly displayed. As a pastor for some years now, I also find that I am dealing with an increase in problems due to the breakdown of the moral fabric of America. And I believe that when America is seduced by this kind of material and those who are the proponents of it, we find a continual increase in the breakdown of the moral fabric. And as a result, as a pastor, I find myself dealing more and more with people even just off the street coming in for help because of a total lack of perception of what God gave to us as pure and good to be used in the lines within the bounds of marriage. These people are dealing with these problems, and they're having real problems in rearing their children because they've had difficulty in understanding the correct, balanced perspective of what sexual conduct is supposed to be. And so I find it increasingly difficult to deal with people because they've had such a battered image of what these types of things are supposed to be. And of course, more and more of it is being dumped into our society. Young people in my church tell me that pornographic material is readily available through the back door of any one of these places, that you can get it or you can get someone to buy it for you. And many times the proprietors will, because they know some of the kids want to be friends or buddies with the kids, will allow this kind of material to be sold out the back door. The community sets up standards for itself, and I believe has a right to legislate and protect these standards. It is only the consensus of the community that determines the standards of public decency. That consensus needs to be properly manifested in public law. Home rule is important. Community standards should be voted on by those people who choose to live within that community. And so, in just summarizing, I would like to say this. If this law that we're advocating won't work, then please help us find one that will. That's what we're really interested in, finding something that will give Mayor Jones and people like him the ability to vote in what they want in their communities, and what they don't want, they don't have to have, and what they do want, they can have. But it's by the people who choose to live in that community. They're voting on what they want. It's called home rule. And we would like to help you, have you help us find something that would work if this particular vehicle will not. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Questions? Thank you for coming up.
Robert Bay.
Mr. Chairman, members of this subcommittee, my name is Robert Bay, and I'm an assistant general manager of the Fred N. Bay News Company in Portland. I'm also an attorney with prior experience as a deputy district attorney in Multnomah County, and 2 years in private law practice before I became involved in our family business. I represent this afternoon the Oregon Periodical Distributors Association. We're a group of magazine and paperback book wholesalers, and I've listed for you the members. We have members whose businesses are operated out of Baker, Coos Bay, Corvallis, Eugene, Medford, Portland, Salem, Boise, Idaho, and Longview, Washington. We distribute mass market magazines and paperback books to retailers, including supermarkets, discount stores, drug and variety stores, convenience stores, bookstores, and other retailers. If you go into a Safeway or an Albertsons, Fred Meyer, 7-Eleven, Plaid Pantry, McKay's, Ross, Mayfair, or any number of any other retail establishment throughout this state, the reading materials you see for sale displayed will have probably been provided by one of our members. We deal in products that are not obscene, as defined by the current statute, nor are the products that we distribute be obscene if defined by House Bill 2431. As a group and as individual business people, we've made great efforts to keep the materials that we do sell that are not appropriate for children unavailable to them. We use special racks which are kept out of the self-service areas to display these products, which we refer to as sophisticates. We are as concerned about the appropriate reading materials for children as anyone. We are opposed to House Bill 2431. The proposed change in language in ORS 167-087-2B relates to the applicable state standard for defining obscenity, and we feel the existing language is preferable. The arguments below are reasons why we think the current statewide standard is preferable to the amendment proposed by House Bill 2431. Our research indicates that House Bill 2431 is probably, and this probably is arguable, but for the purpose of my testimony, let's just assume that it is, probably constitutional at both the state and federal level. It's still not a wise bill. House Bill 2431 would increase the work of both local prosecutors in prosecuting cases under ORS 167087. Under the proposed amendment, prosecutions will have to be brought in every local community within the state rather than simply having one action to determine whether material is obscene in the state at large. A binding statewide conviction cannot be obtained under the proposed amendment. House Bill 2431 promises us gross judicial inefficiency, applications of inconsistent local community standards, and certain confusion among juries throughout the state. This problem is made even more acute by the continuing budget crisis that face both state and local government, including district attorney's offices. At a time when we should try to be as efficient in government as we can, we should not be compounding the problems for local prosecutors. Point number two, House Bill 2431 would create unnecessary problems for wholesalers, retailers, and consumers of mass market periodicals, and I'm talking about our self-interest as business people in this particular point. Under the current law, both wholesalers and retailers know the applicable state standards that are and are able to provide on a statewide basis a broad range of mass market periodicals which, from which the consumer can choose that which he or she wants to read. This amendment would very easily be used to thwart the flow of reading materials on a statewide basis. Is it proper for a local community to decide that Playboy or Penthouse magazine or any number of books which might be offensive to some members of our society are unacceptable for all? A local community standard endangers our traditions of free speech and press by permitting local prejudices and attitudes to dominate the permissibility of reading material within its locality. For the sake of the preservation of the free flow of ideas, we should want to know that even in the smallest community of our state, reading materials expressing valid ideas, although perhaps expressed unusually, and in the opinion of some, expressed obscenely, should be permitted to be provided to our citizens who choose to read them. House Bill 2431 will have a chilling effect on the distribution of legally permissible reading materials. Point three, House Bill 2431 adds nothing to the arsenal of local prosecutors in prosecuting violations of this statute. Clearly, this amendment is aimed at the adult bookstore situation, movie houses, arcades, and other similar targets. We do not sell to these types of retail establishments, but unfortunately, some of the products we do sell are painted by the same brush. We fear that in attacking adult bookstores, our products and retailers might be included, where that would be unjustified. This amendment makes it easier for our products to be the subject of an unwarranted attack. The present language of ORS 167087 allows local prosecutors all the tools they need without threatening mass market periodicals. And we urge the legislature to use restraint and good judgment and not pass this. And the reason I got confused on the word juries is because I wanted to emphasize that the applicable state standard, whether it's written in terms of local community standards or as it presently is in the mind of the person who tries the lawsuit, whether it be the jury or the judge. And if you have a group of jurors from Central Point or Medford, they're going to apply that standard, which is prevalent in their community. And this particular statute is unwarranted. I've heard some of the previous people who testified say, if this is not the proper vehicle, help us find the proper vehicle. I'm not sure whether the dilemma that they pose for you has a clear-cut solution that's going to be acceptable to everyone, or even partially acceptable to everyone. But I'm sure that the ideas that they have been expressing are not even addressed by this statutory change. And I think that you'd be creating many, many more problems than not passing this particular amendment to the existing statute. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions? Thank you very much. Mr. Albrecht.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm John Albrecht. I represent the Oregon Library Association as chairman of their Intellectual Freedom Committee. The Oregon Library Association consists of approximately 550 professional librarians, library trustees, paraprofessionals that work in libraries, and others who have an interest in libraries. I've provided a brief statement of our position prepared by Kathy Eaton, who has just completed, as is indicated, a survey of libraries in the state. As indicated, we opposed the original law. My recollection is that one version of the law had a similar language relevant to community versus statewide standards. We still oppose the law, the one on obscenity, and are particularly opposed to the suggested change. We believe the law encourages those who would prescribe what members of a free and open society read and view. We feel that the suggested change would further encourage censorship in that there could be many different standards throughout the state. We have a strong commitment to freedom, especially as it relates to an individual's freedom to read and view whatever they choose for whatever reason. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Albrecht, and your statement will be reviewed by the committee and made part of our record.
Questions? Thank you. Mr. Fedanke?
Good Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I am Dave Fidanke, the Associate Director of the ACLU of Oregon. The ACLU appears in opposition to House Bill 2431, which would provide that local standards rather than statewide would apply in prosecutions under ORS 167.087. In our view, this bill would make a bad law much worse. A number of provisions of current Oregon obscenity law are already under constitutional attack. Should this proposal be adopted, it would cry out for a constitutional challenge. It's difficult to address this proposal without discussing, at least briefly, the dangers inherent in drafting and successfully prosecuting any statute relating to obscenity. Legislators and judges have been struggling for decades to conjure up a definition of obscenity which would not run counter to our constitutional protections of freedom of speech and expression. One U.S. Supreme Court justice, in noting the frustrations of such a task, wrote that he knew obscenity when he saw it. While the test laid out in Miller versus California is more sophisticated than that, in practice it has led to just this type of subjective judgment by judges and juries. If we were to ask 1,000 different people for their definitions of obscenity, we would get at least 1,000 different responses. One person's obscenity is another person's free expression, and vice versa. Under the current statute, it is already impossible for the owner of a bookstore or a movie theater to know what may be sold or shown and what may not. Recent prosecutions in Oregon clearly show the dangers which this statute already poses for our constitutional protections. 1 year ago, three Lane County adult bookstores were raided by law enforcement authorities. In all three instances, all copies of suspect publications were seized. In the case of the Springfield store, everything was seized, including the bookshelves and the cash register. Among other items confiscated were T-shirts inscribed with the phrase, "To hell with the moral majority." The Lane County Circuit Judge who heard the case thankfully recognized the dangers inherent in the police and district attorney's actions. He ruled that the search warrants were overbroad, ordered the materials returned, and chastised the seizure as, quote, "a clear infringement of the defendant's constitutional right to be free of prior restraint." The district attorney responded by telling the press that he would appeal the judge's ruling and would not return the items until the appeal was decided. The judge soon made it clear he would not grant a stay, and the items were returned, but not until more than a month had passed since they'd been seized. The owner of the bookstore told reporters he would have been happy to cooperate with police officials to determine what materials in his store were obscene. He even said he hoped the result would be a, quote, "banned book list of some sort, so that we'll have some guidelines for operating," close quote. Eventually, the trial went forward on the basis of the items which the police had purchased in order to obtain the search warrants. The result was a conviction on 4 magazines and 3 films and no verdict on a 5th magazine. In an editorial of the December 15, 1982, Eugene Register Guard, the editorial stated, and again I'm quoting, "some courtroom observers couldn't see much difference between the magazine found innocent and those found guilty. The law does not forbid the depiction of explicit sexual activity per se on film or paper. Yet different juries are likely to judge the same material differently. The vendor is forced to guess how a jury might react to any given item he decides to put on his shelves," end quote. A similar conclusion resulted in Deschutes County, where a Redmond bookstore owner was acquitted on 7 charges and convicted on 2. And I'd like to throw in here that presumably materials that are found not to be obscene by a jury, particularly where there is a verdict of acquittal, presumably those materials are protected by the First Amendment and Article 1, Section 8 of the Oregon Constitution. And yet the district attorney in Deschutes County, when asked on those 7 items where the jury had brought in an innocent verdict, was asked if it was okay to sell those items now in Deschutes County. And he said, quote, and this was a deputy district attorney named Mike Dugan, and I'm reading from a Ben Bulletin story of August 1, 1982. "It's a question of what type of material is being sold," Dugan said. "If it's hardcore, it's not going to exist without some intimidation from the police and district attorney. I am not advocating that others start selling this stuff in the belief they won't be prosecuted." And he was specifically referring to the items that had, where an acquittal verdict had been returned. That case is currently on appeal, the Deschutes County case, and the ACLU is representing the defendant. I've recited these facts in order to make two points. First, case law is clear that where accusations of obscenity are brought, the Constitution requires that the material be treated as constitutionally protected until it's judicially determined to be obscene. And as I just said, materials which are determined not to be obscene presumably continue to be protected. And yet, even with the current statewide standard, it's virtually impossible for anyone to know what violates the law and what doesn't. The Oregon Supreme Court has implied that this type of statute may violate the ex post facto and privileges and immunities provisions of the Oregon Constitution by delegating the legislative power to judges and juries and by, quote, inviting standardless and unequal application of penal laws, quoting a number of cases which are in the written testimony. My second point is that even if we assume the present statute can be constitutionally applied, it breeds an atmosphere which encourages overzealous prosecutors and police officers to run roughshod over the constitutional protections of our Bill of Rights. The bill before you would have us ignore the constitutional infirmities of the present statute and compound them 100-fold. To begin with, the bill fails to define local community. Does that mean a metropolitan area, a county, a city, or perhaps even a neighborhood? Presumably, the mayor of Central Point wishes the state to prosecute the dissemination of materials in Central Point that might be deemed acceptable in Portland or Bend. There's no language in this bill that would prohibit one particular magazine or film from being prosecuted in every city and county in this state, even if it were found not to be obscene in every instance. The question before you today goes to the heart of our constitutional form of government. This bill is not a local control bill. It is a local secession bill. We are dealing with the protections of the Oregon Constitution, not the Central Point Constitution. Again, it is the position of the ACLU of Oregon that the state has no business censoring the material which consenting adults wish to read or view. We are currently pursuing appeals of the present statute, which we believe violates as many as three provisions of the Oregon Bill of Rights, including the freedom of expression, Article 1, Section 8. In our view, House Bill 2431 would compound the constitutional defects of the present statute and greatly increase the likelihood that a constitutional challenge of Oregon's obscenity statute would be successful. We do not believe that the proponents of this bill intend to weaken present law, but that would be the effect. The ACLU of Oregon urges you to table this proposal at the earliest opportunity unless you agree with us that censorship has no place in a free society. If that's the case, then we urge you to amend House Bill 2431 or introduce another bill to repeal the current statute.
Thank you. Are there questions? Thank you, Dave.
Thanks.
Charlie Williamson.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Charles Williamson, 1001 Pacific Building, Portland. I represent the Oregon Theater Owners Association. We oppose this bill. I don't really have a lot to add to what's been said. We're concerned that the law is muddy enough as it is now, and that we can be, or our members could be convicted of a crime in one community when showing the same film in another community would not be a crime. So we would prefer to have the law left as it is. I do think that the bill itself doesn't really appear to address the problems which the people from Central Point have brought forth, and I would think there'd be a way through the zoning laws to address their problem. I know that the Catherine Beaumont from the City Attorney's Office in Portland has worked extensively with a ordinance which the City of Portland, I believe, has adopted, and it might be that your staff or the Central Point people or DA down there could get in touch with the city and see if there is some sort of zoning ordinance that would deal with their local situation without the necessity of a state statute being passed. I don't have anything further.
A lot more. Charlie, have any of your people, to your knowledge, ever been prosecuted under ORS 167087, the law that is attempting to be amended?
Not to my knowledge. Our people generally don't show anything more than an R-rated film, but you know, there was an article in the paper the other day by Mike Royko where a group in Buffalo was trying to ban a book called Boss, about Mayor Daley of Chicago that Royko wrote because it used bad language. And you really can never tell when some group in some community is going to take off on something. And that's the concern that we have. I mean, there are films that do have artistic merit or otherwise that somebody could take out after, even, you know, though it's R-rated. And that's the concern that we would have.
But you haven't had any problems with Oregon's current law?
Not to my knowledge. Not our membership, no.
Mayor, did you get the name of the woman who Charlie mentioned in Portland? It may be someone you would like to be in touch with respect to the land use aspects.
The zoning is even a problem with us. The citizens of Central Point is not more than a pornography shop in Central Point, so we want exempt from our zoning regulations. As long as you're going to acknowledge it on your books and your regulations of Central Point, you're going to have it in any community. We want it exempt from our community. They're not trying to deprive any other community of having such, but they, so we want for the vote of the people.
Thank you, Charlie.
Thank you.
Barbara Bucott.
My name is Barbara Bucot, and I am a resident of Corvallis. I am the coordinator of a Corvallis citizen committee called People for Public Education, and I would like to speak in opposition to House Bill 2431. Some of you may be aware that in Corvallis, we are engaged in a community debate over what our children should or should not be reading in school. A conservative group has formed the Committee for Quality School Textbooks, and members of this committee have been titillating readers of our local newspaper with spicy quotes from various works of literature and from textbooks alleged to be in use in our school system. Much of the material used by this group seems to have come from the textbook censoring organization of Mel and Norma Gabler of Texas. It is in opposition to this group of would-be textbook censors that People for Public Education was organized. Our committee includes clergy men and women, physicians, university professors, business and professional people, and parents, and we are united in a concern that our basic American rights to read, to learn, and to think not be abridged. Censorship at the local level creates community uproar. It places a burden on local officials who are not equipped to handle it. It divides communities and inflames emotions. Sometimes it leads to public book burnings, to destruction of public property. We urge you to retain, at the state level, the responsibility for determining what is obscene. Attached to this, you will have a selection of letters from the local paper of the kind that we have had page after page after page of this winter in Corvallis, and you will find following that a cartoon by our own local cartoonist at the Corvallis Gazette-Times, his view of the matter of censorship. Having listened to the testimony this afternoon, I would like to just add a couple of things. One, statistics. Be very, very careful of cause and effect. I've heard statistics cited for years over a variety of things, mainly related to family planning because I've been in that field for some years. Be very careful that you're really seeing cause-effect and you're not seeing a recounting of unrelated circumstances. Further, it does not surprise me that Dr. Bob Gast is concerned about pornography because, as many of us know, he is the coordinator in Oregon for the moral majority. Presumably, he holds the views of the moral majority leader, Jerry Falwell, and as we all know, Jerry Falwell does not have a very high regard for pornography. The third thing, and I guess the basic message is, I hope that when you locate the proper vehicle, you will garage that proper vehicle here at Salem in the state garage. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions? Joanne Stern.
A
I'm Joanne Stern. I'm the president of the Oregon Division of the American Association of University Women. We have 3,600 members throughout the state of Oregon, located in over 60 communities representing all parts of our state. I want to reaffirm our support for protection of the freedom of the right to read. We see House Bill 2431 as being a restriction of that freedom. In fact, the statement made by Mayor Jones gives voice to the fear that we have. He wants you to allow him and his council, granted I don't know if he's spelling council with a C-I-L or an S-E-L, but he wants that freedom to set the standard for what may be available in his community, and that's precisely what we are afraid of.
I do have a question. Admittedly, there are maybe those publications, texts and books and what have you, where it's truly a gray area, and there's plenty of room for honest differences of opinion. But it seems to me, of course, that what we're trying to address here is the question of whether or not a community can and should be able to say whether or not it's going to have the so-called adult bookstores in their community. Do you think that we should be saying as a state to the local communities whether or not they can, whether it be by zoning or otherwise, that they cannot determine if they're going to have an adult bookstore in that community?
To me, the zoning restrictions are a separate issue from determining whether or not I'm going to be able